looks like it's 4:15, so let's kick things off. Welcome, thanks for coming along today. Thanks for coming to Rapid Application Development with the Azure App Service. Today we're going to be talking about how you can supercharge application development using some of the features and offerings of Azure and the Azure App Service specifically. My name is James, I'm a solution architect at Zomata. I'm a solution architect at Zomata as of Monday, so less than 48 hours. With that particular company, so I'm going to be talking quite a lot about my experiences with Intergen. So Intergen is quite a big systems integrator here in New Zealand and a Microsoft partner. Zomata does some similar things that are a little startup in the States and also work closely with Microsoft. Prior to these two companies, I worked for Microsoft as a developer building products that nobody remembers about anymore and definitely nobody uses anymore. This story actually, this presentation actually started a number of months ago in a bar, and I was talking with one of my colleagues about development, as you do from time to time when you're having a drink, and he was reminiscing about the good old days of development in the late 90s with VB6 and Access databases. And I've done a little bit of VB6 and I've done a little bit of Access, and I don't miss that at all. That was always a pretty rough way to build and develop software. But I think he had a really good point, and it got me thinking about, you know, his point was that was a super efficient, super rapid way to build applications. You know, you could get something to market really quickly, especially in the line of business space. And it got me thinking about, you know, it's very easy with modern development tools, modern development frameworks, to get a little bit lost in the tool chain, to get a little bit lost in the craftsmanship and forget about the actual delivery of value to customers. So that's where this talk came from. And fortunately, we had a project that required a lot of these rapid development capabilities and that kind of rapid development mindset recently. So that's what I want to talk to you about today, is a project that we had completed quite recently and how Azure really enabled us to succeed in that space. So this all started back in December of 2014, and I was actually on vacation at this point. I was actually on vacation in New Zealand, so it looked a little bit more like this, a little bit grayer. It was in December, and we got a call from a customer, and they had an internal event coming up where they wanted to provide apps for their attendees, right? So an app that was going to provide attendees with some basic information about the event. You know, a bunch of vendors to work with, they had a modest budget to work with, and most importantly, it was 6 months before the event was scheduled to happen. So we had plenty of time to go in and develop and work with them to make this happen. So I jumped off the beach, as it was, and put together a proposal, bit of architecture diagramming, submitted everything, and then, as so often happens in the consulting world, nothing, right? Nobody comes back to us, nobody says anything, and we think, okay, well, great, you know, you don't win in every deal, right? Some deals you just don't go your way, and, you know, we didn't hear anything. But you know where this is heading, right? Now it's 6 weeks before the event, and we get a little bit of a call at the office. I didn't actually have many photos of the office on my camera roll, unfortunately, so that's why we get the one of the dog. But we get the call from the customer. Hey, remember that event that we asked for about 6 months ago? We still want that, but we've only got 6 weeks now. So this presentation really is us sharing a whole bunch of experiences that we had with Azure in delivering this particular application. And while this particular project was an app, a lot of the stuff, I would say the vast majority of the stuff that we're going to say talk about today is equally applicable to web development. It's not going to be a tightly coupled Windows app development story. So we were able to deliver it on time, and it's pretty cool to say that still now, a year and a half later, they're still using this app. It's still providing value to their business, even though it was something that we put together very rapidly in the space of about a month. So what's on the agenda for today's session? Well, we're going to start off and we're going to talk a little bit about Azure in general. We're going to say, hey, what is the application development and hosting offerings on Azure look like? And then we're going to drill in to the app service specifically and talk a little bit about what makes that useful and what makes that a great choice and what capabilities that it brings to bear. And then we've got kind of four phases that we're going to step through. Each of these phases, I'm going to do a little bit of a demo and show you some code. We're going to start from the really kind of way too easy way to bootstrap an app on the app service. We're going to go and have a look in Visual Studio, then we're going to go and add a whole bunch of features that you typically need to add when you're building apps, and then we're going to take a look at the manageability story right at the end. And then, all going to plan, we'll have a little bit of time for wrap-up and Q&A at the end. So what is the Azure App Service? Well, to understand that, we kind of need to step back and talk about the Azure Application Platform just very quickly. Obviously, at the very bottom layer of this stack, we have an infrastructure as a service offering, right? So we can spin up VMs. That's obviously one way we can manage our applications. More realistically, we'd probably be using containers or something like that at this layer. But on the top of the stack, or the platform as a service offerings, we actually have quite a broad selection of things to consider. If you've been developing with Azure for a while now, you'll probably be more than familiar with cloud services. Cloud services are the initial compute offering in Azure. I probably wouldn't be using them for new builds, but because you know a fairly substantial chunk of Azure is actually implemented as cloud services, they're not going to be going away anytime soon. We also now have Azure Functions, so that's serverless compute. That's your AWS Lambda style on an event, run this bit of code. We have Service Fabric, which is probably one of the most interesting technologies to come out of at Microsoft for a while now. This is for building microservices. This is for building highly stateful applications with in-memory replication of data. Very cool technology, but not really something that's needed for a lot of traditional applications. And then we have the App Service, and this is really the default starting point for me when I build new apps. And we've built some really big apps on this service. Another way, for web and mobile, App Service, definitely the right choice. Most apps that we build go onto the App Service. Potentially for microservices or highly stateful apps, you'll look to Service Fabric, Functions, Serverless Compute, Cloud Services, if you're already on them. And then obviously there's a bunch of other PaaS offerings that Microsoft supports because their cloud is pretty open. So let's talk about the Azure App Service. When we talk about the Azure App Service, we tend to talk about four different types of apps. And they're actually a little bit different under the covers. So we'll talk about them from a functionality perspective, and then we're going to talk a little bit about how they actually are implemented as well. So the two on the top, web apps and logic apps and API apps, kind of share a common core, a common web platform that they get built on. And the idea with all of them is that they kind of add these turnkey features on top, right? So I can bring my app, and then I can activate features that make building these styles of apps easier. So for example, with mobile apps, if you bring your mobile app, I can bring my API, and then there's some nice little switches that we can do to do things like offline data or push notifications. But API apps is some nice turnkey features to do things like Swagger, metadata, and cause rules and authentication. And similarly for apps, we can do auth and a whole bunch of other things. So these are kind of all based on the same platform. You can bring a whole bunch of different languages, a whole bunch of different OSs, and then just turn on the features that you think are going to be useful for those kinds of applications. So those three are all pretty similar. And then we have Logic Apps, which is the fourth one, and it's a little bit different. It has a different pricing model, a different hosting model. Logic Apps is really a successor to BizTalk style workflows, right? It's an integration engine. There's a whole bunch of out-of-the-box adapters, there's a whole bunch of control flows and error handling flows, and you can build visually an integration pipeline in that service. So they're the four types of apps in the App Service. Three of them are pretty hard to distinguish between, and then the Logic Apps is actually quite a different beast under the covers. The fifth honorary member of the Azure App Service family, I think, is Azure Functions, because while Azure Functions, you can do this whole serverless compute model, which is great, you can actually share resources from your applications with Azure Functions, so they can actually all be co-hosted on the same set of resources, which we'll see in a moment, but there's definitely some connection in there. So they're kind of maybe the five members of the Azure App Service family. So that's what app services are. They're the four types of app services, or the five types of app services. The next concept that we should have a quick look at is the app service plan. And this is something that I think opens up a whole bunch of opportunities as you invest in the app service model. So when we take a look at an app service, if we go and, for example, provision a website, that website we can configure, we can deploy to, we can manage, we can do a whole bunch of interesting stuff with. And then we select an app service plan, which describes the hosting environment, right? So there are separate entities in Azure. They're separate things, right? So we define our web app, we configure it, we put all our code in it, and then we want to say, hey, I'm going to host this on Foodplan. And the App Service Plan controls things like, hey, how big are the VMs? How many VMs am I going to use for this particular application? So they kind of split the hosting reality from the application piece. So if we think about how this particular combination of web app and App Service Plan looks like in a data center, you know, we have one small VM, and that's where the web app runs. Now, if we were to increase the VM count to 3, then big surprise, that app then runs on 3 VMs. And that's all very well and good, that all, you know, is pretty logical. Where things I think get pretty cool is that if I create a new app, and maybe we'll make this one a mobile app, I can also run that on the same App Service Plan. So I get all my mobile app then runs on those 3 VMs as well. So from a line of business app perspective, this offers us a whole bunch of interesting possibilities in terms of hosting density, right? So I can still manage these apps completely separately. They run in separate app domains and pools. You know, they can be configured from a diagnostics and manageability perspective, authentication perspective, all completely separately, but I get to share a hosting environment. So, you know, I can get some pretty good density here as I, you know, invest further in the app service. But if, for whatever reason, my new app becomes too successful and I want to go and put it somewhere else, I can do that too. That's just a configuration change. I can move that into another App Service Plan when I need to. So I have this nice kind of decoupling between hosting and applications. Applications are really basically just logical containers that I can move around as my requirements need it. Okay, so that's kind of a couple of the key concepts there. Let's go on and actually have a look at some code. And we're going to be looking at really just the most simple, easy way to get started. It's just too easy way to get started with the Azure App Service. And a lot of this easy functionality came from mobile services. And mobile services, if you're not familiar with, was in market a few years ago, and it's now kind of been transitioned into mobile apps. Mobile services was described to me by a former fairly senior Microsoft employee as an elephant standing on the back of a dog in a boat on a lake. And that it's, you know, got some really interesting pieces, but it's probably, you know, not necessarily the way you would have arranged them if you had all of your choices in front of you. So one of the really cool things is that they've kept all the great functionality of mobile services, but they've kind of re-established it as part of the app service. So you get all the really cool app service functionality as well, like, you know, support for Traffic Manager and a sane pricing model and deployment slots and a whole bunch of cool stuff. So if the functionality does look a little bit familiar, that's where it's coming from. And like mobile services, it's very much, it's a cross-platform offering. At its heart, it's just RESTful services, it's OAuth, and then there's SDKs for a whole bunch of different platforms if you want code-level support. And while, you know, they say this is a mobile service, you know, because this is just RESTful interfaces, there's no reason you couldn't use this but to power a website, for example. It's you know, a little bit confusingly named. So from our project perspective, while we didn't end up using this functionality in the project, we did use it to bootstrap our development, right? We had such a short time frame. This was a really easy way for us to get some APIs up and running and for our front-end developers to have something to develop against. So let me switch over to DemoBox and show you some of this in action. Right, so here I am in my app service. It happens to be a mobile service, but these functions are available for, you know, web apps as well. It's not something that's really terribly important which one you choose. So the first setting I want to show you here is authentication. And I can simply configure either organizational identity, which is through Azure Active Directory, or social identity through these four providers, simply by providing the credentials that I need to federate with these groups. So for instance, when I go into my Microsoft account, do I provide my client ID, client secret, the kinds of permissions I want to request, and now when people hit this website, they'll be redirected to a Microsoft account to authenticate. So I've only got Microsoft account configured, but if I were to configure all of these providers, which I can completely and absolutely can do, one of the things that the app service provides is basically a standardized token response to my application. So regardless of how these folks have authenticated, I'll get a standard token to work with. Now, one of the cool features down here, which is the token store, is that App Service will actually maintain all the raw tokens from these services. So when it redirects to Facebook to go and authenticate, it'll keep the original Facebook token. So we can actually request the original tokens if you, for example, want to go and post on somebody's timeline or post a photo to their Google Plus or whatever. So while it does kind of standardize the token, so you get kind of a one global response from regardless of what kind of identity provider the App Service has been configured with, you can actually get those underlying tokens if you happen to need them. So that's authentication and authorization, and you can obviously see where social identity makes a whole bunch of sense when it comes to, you know, consumer-facing web and mobile apps. For API apps, you're probably going to be using things like Azure Active Directory to secure it, but it's a very easy way to apply authentication with very little code. So that's the auth step. Then the remaining functions are down here. Next one to talk about is Easy Tables. Easy Tables is basically allows us to take a CSV file. It will infer the schema from that CSV file, create a table in SQL Server, and then expose that SQL Server table as an API. And it's literally just as simple as uploading a CSV file. So if we have a look at the one that I've already uploaded, this was just a straight CSV file upload. These were all the sessions in the session catalog for the conference this year. So now that these are uploaded, I can do things like, you know, have some basic control over the permissions. So whether, obviously we don't want them to have the ability to, you know, edit this, but we can restrict read permission to authenticated users only. So suddenly we have an API that my app can work with. Now obviously, you know, life is never that simple. We don't generally just expose all of the data in our databases out to the wider world. Typically we're going to need to do some kind of logic before we want to return that data. And we can do that. So this is another table that I've got here that's going to be storing the interest of attendees in attending various sessions. So let's jump into this one. So this is going to load an editor, a web editor, and we can actually go in and write some JavaScript. So in here, what I've done on the read, the insert, and the delete operations is applied a little bit of logic. So for example, when this read happens, we're actually going to only return rows that are applicable to the user that is logged in. So I suspect I know what you're thinking here, and that you're thinking, okay, well, that's all very cute, but you know, we're real developers. We're probably not going to write our applications by pointing and clicking. We want to see some more code. Before we actually show you a slightly more traditional way of building apps, I will point out that this is a Node.js app that you can wire up to source control and download and work with locally. If we have a look at the app itself, we can see that it's based on Express, which is a very popular Node.js framework. So even though there was a whole bunch of pointing and clicking and CSV imports in the front end, what it was actually building in the back end is a legitimate Node.js app. There's no kind of magic happening. It's actually just compiling an app that you can take and run anywhere and extend it and work with. So before we jump back into the slides, I will show you my very simple app, and I'm not really an app developer, so you'll have to forgive me for a few poor UX choices. If we have a look at some of the code here, newing up a client for this is super simple. It's just a new mobile services client with the URL of the service that we want to point to. Now, there's no reason you couldn't just use an HTTP client and grab this over a RESTful interface. It's a well-documented standard REST interface. But there is a nice client package, and like we mentioned before, you know, there's cross-platform builds for Xamarin and iOS and Android and Cordova. It does make things really simple, though. So for example, signing into the app is, you know, one line, and you provide the provider, the identity provider you want to sign in with, one line. Similarly, for registering for push notifications, the first line here is platform specific. That's how we get the channel on Windows, and then there's one line to register that with the server-side API. And then finally, to actually get the data, again, super simple, get table. And then we can just do a to list on the results. And we get all the data back. We can go in and do interesting things like predicates that will allow us to filter this data. And because I've defined types here, it comes back in a way that's strongly typed and suitable for data binding. So let's just fire this app up very quickly so you can see all the time that I've spent building this sophisticated app for you folks. So this is going to go to the endpoint. It's going to go and request a whole bunch of these results. This worked really, really well on my connection at home, which is a fiber connection, but the attendee Wi-Fi here is a little sluggish, so we might have to be patient with this as we go through. So basically, it pulls back all the information that I had originally uploaded as CSV file through the endpoints. There's a couple of buttons here, so you can indicate my interest to attend a session, so I can click that, and it'll hit that other endpoint that we had a look at. So that's the super, super easy way to get started. So great tip for going and building a POC or something really quickly. But you know, we've actually built legitimate apps just with this, right? We built an application that managed our developer VMs in Azure. So it integrated with Azure through the Azure SDKs, and we were able to turn VMs on and off on a schedule as required. So you know, it is absolutely possible to do some pretty interesting things with a very modest set of tools here. But like I said, I get it. We want to have a look at some more serious applications. So let's go and have a look at that. So one of the really cool things about the Azure App Platform, or the Azure App Service rather, is that it is as open as it possibly can be. So you can bring .NET code, absolutely. You can bring .NET Core code, you can bring Python, you can bring PHP, you can bring Java, you can bring Node.js, and it'll run on this platform. There's also a whole bunch of options in the marketplace you can pre-deploy, right? So you can say, hey, give me an Umbraco site. Give me a WordPress site that's set up for massive scale. Give me an Orchard site, and it will go and deploy it, and you can simply extend and customize it. Quite excitingly, Linux is now in preview for this. So you can, up until this point, everything has had to run on Windows, but now Linux for the app service is also now in preview. So this is very much a, hey, whatever you're writing your code in, great. Keep writing it in that and bring it here. It's a very open set of tools. Similarly, hey, you want to bring your code to this platform, you know, it is very open. If you want to store your code in Dropbox and connect your Dropbox account up to your production deployment, I'm not recommending that, but if you did hypothetically want to do that, that is totally great. If you want to use FTP, if you want to use GitHub, any of these platforms are supported as ways to get your code in here. And then as you start to build out, you can pick up the features that you want. You know, you can pick up the authentication feature we had a brief look at. You can bring in deployment slots and testing and virtual network connectivity that we'll talk a little bit about later. You can pick up some of the API functionality like Swagger, metadata, cores. All of these features you can then just kind of turn on as you require them. So let's switch back and check out some code. So what I want to show you here is exactly the same set of functionality, but I want to show it to you in a .NET or a web API project. So this is just standard web API, and in fact, it's so standard I didn't even use the web API template that Visual Studio provides because there was too much stuff in it, right? There is basically very little code required to get this up and running. So if we have a look in the startup file here and kind of scan through this. This bit up here is just standard web API, a bit of standard entity framework, a bit of standard app insights. This is really all I need to do here to start building my mobile app. One of the other really nice things they did when they moved from mobile services to mobile apps is they componentized a whole bunch of this stuff. So rather than having to take a bet on everything, if all you want is the authentication or if all you want is the push notification piece, you can just grab the NuGet package for that. You don't actually have to grab everything anymore. So it is kind of componentized in a way that makes it a little bit more useful to more scenarios. So as you add more of these NuGet packages, you get more of these extension methods to use in this kind of fluent API here. So what I've got here is that we have a nice placeholder homepage for the API. We map any API controllers. We map our entity framework data context into table controllers like we did before. We enable support for push, and we're ready to go. So how do we expose our data? Well, we can build a pretty standard entity framework context, right? So I've got my two data types here, Entity Framework code first. This has been around for a few years now. There's nothing particularly special here. There's a little bit of magic here to support some of the offline stuff that we'll have a look at later, but basically it's just inheriting from the standard DB context. So once we have our data set up, it's really easy to go and expose that data as a controller. So we can go new controller, and there's even a template here for mobile apps. So we can actually create that. I can select the data context, I can select the model, and build a controller. So it goes and bootstraps this. So I've got a method here for get, either get everything or get one. I've got one here for update, one here for create, and one down the very bottom there for delete. If I don't want to support all of these operations, I just delete these snippets of code, right? So it's a very rapid way of exposing data that's sitting in your database to the world. The magic part is up the top here. So I create my new entity framework context, and then I create this domain manager concept. And basically, this is what maps the RESTful stuff to the backend database. And there's one out of the box called the Entity Domain Manager, which obviously, as the name would suggest, supports Entity Framework, but it is expecting an interface of type iDomain Manager. So if you do want to store your other data somewhere else, you can. You can implement your own domain manager. I won't pretend that it's an easy thing to go in and implement and do, but it is absolutely something if you find that your data is stored somewhere else, something to consider. So it's a very small piece of code that we need to add to ensure this functionality is available to our client. If I have a look at one that I built earlier, this is the session controller. So this is for all the session data that we saw loaded up. So it's basically two methods that were bootstrapped to enable read-only access. Slapped an authorize attribute on the top, so it'll expect authorization through the authorization functionality we configured earlier. And that's it. We can now work with this. So one of the nice features about this is whether you may start with that Node.js backend just to get something up and running really quickly. The .NET version of the backend works in the same way. So if I go over to my UWP app and actually switch over to the .NET version, which I've already deployed in JC Ignite 1, and in fact deployment, I should probably just call out is super easy as well. I can go and publish this, and when I launch the publish dialog, it actually comes up as a first class citizen here, right? I can click on app service and just click on the app service that I want to deploy to. So super rapid release cadence from code on your desktop to test or to dev. So if we flip back to the UWP app, as you can see here, I'm pointing to the new URL. This is the .NET version of the API. If I run the app, it's going to work in exactly the same way. So, you know, get started really rapidly, expose some endpoints for your app developers to work with, and then as soon as you're unblock them, you can start working on a .NET version if that's your preferred language. Okay, so let's jump back to the slides. Accelerate our development. So that's a very simple way of exposing our data through to our apps. Things are going to get a whole bunch more complex though, right? It's never as simple as, you know, a data and a nice view tier on top of it. And what I want to talk about now is a whole bunch of the features that Azure offers that we can pick up in a way that is easy for the app service to consume. So it's a whole bunch of really small, quick wins that accelerate our development cycle. So when we talk about authentication, we kind of have to think about authentication in two senses. One is authentication from a server perspective, so server-driven authentication. Our other option is client-driven authentication. And if you're building websites, it's not anywhere near as big of a concern. What we've shown you so far is server-driven authentication. Basically, our app wakes up, it calls the server, and then gets routed off to whatever authentication provider we need to use. And it's a great way to get started. If we're building apps, though, client-driven authentication is something that we probably want to consider. Client-driven authentication is actually when I go in and grab the Microsoft account SDK or the Google SDK or the Facebook SDK and implement that on my device specifically. And when I do that, I get better sign-in experiences, right? Rather than seeing the Google sign-in screen on my Android device can actually detect the fact that I'm already signed in with my Google account and actually just prompt me to re-sign in, rather than having to go through the web view. So depending on the style of app, you may want to opt for client-driven authentication rather than the service stuff. Having said that, mobile services supports both, right? So you don't need to be trapped in one way or another. It will support both flows. Just to make things slightly more complicated, there's a really excellent service, and I think it's still in preview, but I'm sure it'll be out of preview if it's not soon, if it's not already, which is Azure Active Directory B2C, or business to consumer. And if you've been floating around the Azure space for long enough, you'll remember the access control service. And the access control service was a nice way to do social authentication, but then it hasn't really been touched or improved for many, many years. And this is kind of the spiritual successor to that. One of the problems with authentication, one of the problems with social authentication, as we've seen so far, is that you don't have anywhere to kind of maintain a list, right? You may have done social authentication with your applications before, but you end up having to build a user table anyway because you want to record information about who's signed into your application. You may want to collect a couple of additional fields about these people, so you need to build in a registration screen anyway. So even though social authentication gets you out of the business of storing usernames and passwords, you probably still need some kind of registration flow. And B2C offers that, right? You can say, I want to collect additional information, and then I want to be able to query B2C and actually get information about my users back out. So there's a whole bunch of nicety around B2C that's worth considering as you build applications. And it's super easy to drop into the model that is promoted by App Service. The other really cool part of B2C is that it supports local sign-up, right? Not everyone wants to sign in with their social accounts. You don't want to deter people from using your application if you don't have that option. So Azure AD B2C actually allows people to register with their email address. It also does things like password reset flows. It does things like multi-factor authentication. So there's a whole bunch of nice stuff that we can pick up with B2C really easily integrated into App Service and use it to improve sign-in experiences. So that's authentication. The next step is data, and this is kind of a mobile-specific problem, but you know, when you're building mobile apps, there is a general expectation that they're gonna work offline, right? You know, especially in a line of business scenario, offline support is pretty important, right? People go out of mobile network coverage, they still need to have the data that they need to get their jobs done. And that's one justification for offline sync. The other part of offline data is that when you launch an app, generally you want that app to be ready to go immediately. You want those experiences to be available to the user as soon as the app launches. So there's another justification for really keeping data offline, right? You don't want to have to wait for a whole bunch of HTTP requests to complete before you can enable any of the experiences. So having some way of caching data or you know maintaining an offline copy of the data is really important for app development. And mobile app offline data features are pretty impressive, and we'll have a look at that in just a moment. The other brief shout out that I want to make when we're talking about data is the Azure SQL, and I'm sure there have been some great talks about Azure SQL at this conference, so I don't want to drill into this too much, but recently they've added a whole bunch of features around workload advising, and basically what that will do is that if you enable it, it will start recommending indexes, configuration changes, and the like that are actually going to improve the performance of your database. So consider it kind of a DBA as a service offering. So we'll have a bit of a look at that as well. And then finally, we already kind of mentioned this briefly, but push is another thing that you're typically going to want to add to your apps. And notification hubs, they've been around for a wee while now, are very well integrated into App Service and make it very easy for apps developed with the App Service to register. And for Notification Hub to take care of a lot of that integration work that would otherwise be required to hit you know, the Google Notification Service or the Apple Notification Service. So at this point, a lot of the features that we've talked about have been quite mobile specific. Obviously, user authentication is something that's applicable broadly, but push, offline sync, rich SDKs, these are typically a lot of mobile concepts. And this kind of summarizes all of the features that are relevant to mobile. But you know that's really only part of the application. That's really only part of any application we build. There's a whole lot of other stuff. And the one that you know comes to mind most readily to me is integration, right? You know, I'm gonna have something on-premise. I'm gonna have something that I'm ideally gonna be able to connect to from my new cloud-based application. And I've got a couple of options with the App Service, and it's super easy to get started connecting your App Service back to on-premise. So the first option that I have is to use a virtual network, right? So if I have worked and played nicely with my IT department, they may have already connected our on-premise network to a virtual network in Azure. This requires a site-to-site network connection. It's a VPN. There's a whole bunch of networking smarts that are required to do this, so there's a little bit of a setup investment. But once this is established, it's actually very simple, and I'll show you in just a moment how simple to connect an app service into that virtual network. Basically, what happens is the app service creates a VPN network, VPN into that virtual network. And suddenly, all of your on-premise resources are available as though they were in the cloud. That's a very cool way to get started if you have an IT department that's already kind of set up this infrastructure. The other approach, and there are lots of different approaches, but this is one of the other approaches, is to use a hybrid connection. And basically what happens here is that you install a little bit of software on the server that you want to access on-premise, right? And then that piece of software will start up, it will reach out, so you don't have to open up a whole bunch of firewall ports. It will reach out to the cloud. Your app service will similarly reach out to the cloud, and there'll be a negotiated connection via the cloud. So if you don't have a virtual network VPN connection into Azure, then this is a super way of getting data from on-premise. Once we actually have this data, then we need to think about what those integration flows might look like. And that's where Logic Apps come in. Logic Apps have a whole bunch of connectors to a whole bunch of popular software as a service vendors. They also have a whole bunch of control flow components. And increasingly, a lot of the logic that used to live in BizTalk server is ending up here. So if you're wanting to do XML transforms, if you're wanting to do AS2 integration, they have a whole bunch of connectors that enable these scenarios. So it's not just for the new and cool software as a service integrations, it's actually for the more traditional business level integrations as well. And that's just a wee snippet of the different integration providers. Unfortunately, they were so numerous that they're a little bit small. And this list is continually growing. Another very common thing that you're going to want to do with your apps is do something in the background. Do something on a timer, do something that is event-driven. And there are a couple of options here. We have web jobs. These run on the same hardware as your app service. They're just background tasks. There's a whole bunch of ways to bring this, right? So you can bring a console app. You can bring a batch script, a PowerShell script, a Node.js script, a Python script, a PHP script. There's lots of different ways to implement your background tasks. You just upload them and they'll start running. You can run them on a schedule or as a continuous operation. That's kind of the traditional way to do it, but now with Azure Functions coming along, that's probably going to be a slightly more modern way of doing it. So that allows you to drop a snippet of code in that is going to run on a particular event, whether it be a time or a message arriving or the like. And then there are a whole bunch of other technologies we won't have time to talk about today, but things like Azure Search are easy to drop into these kinds of scenarios, things like the hosted Redis offering Microsoft has on Azure. We'll talk actually a little bit more about that. But lots of Azure services can be quite easily plugged into these service scenarios. So let's take a look at some of these in action. One moment while my laptop decides to come back to life. There we go. Fantastic. So before we go and have a look at some of these features, the one thing we're not going to need to do any changes on is the actual API code. That's all. That will work immediately with offline sync. We don't have to change anything at all. All we need to do is change the client. So whether it be the Node.js version that we had a look at before, or whether it's the new .NET version, by using the SDK, the NuGet packages for mobile apps, we get offline out of the box. So let's take a look at what's required here on the client. And I have another version of the view model, and I'm just going to redirect for a moment to go point to that. So what do we need to do to get some of these offline features in place? Well, it's pretty simple. Where it used to say get table, we now say get sync table. So rather than getting the remote version of the data, we just get the local version. So four characters required to go and get the local data. There is a little bit more to it than that. First time that the app boots up, we need to do a little bit of bootstrapping. So we need to say what file we're going to store the data in. We need to say which tables we want to define in the database. And once that's in place, we do actually need to trigger an explicit sync operation. So we need to push up changes. We need to pull down new data. But a lot of the complexity of, hey, what data has changed? What data do I need to share with the server and apply? That's entirely obscured from view. So things like deleting and inserting new records is exactly the same. The only difference is that you do it against the local data store rather than the remote data store. A couple of other things have changed in this version of the view model too. I got sick of typing in my password every time the app started. So one of the nice things about that token store that we saw earlier on, because App Service actually maintains all of the original tokens when we authenticate, it actually allows us to use the refresh aspect of the tokens, right? If you're familiar with OAuth, you get an access token and a refresh token. It keeps all the refresh tokens around for you. You don't have to worry about where these refresh tokens are or even how to do a refresh on in an OAuth flow. It's literally one line. And that'll work across the different supported application providers. Very simple to go and trigger a refresh. If we jump into the portal, I will briefly show you Azure B2C. You can see here that I've configured only one social identity provider. It's very similar. I have to provide an ID and a password. And that I've also enabled local accounts, Microsoft accounts and local accounts. Where things get really cool with Azure B2C is the sign-up policies. Let me load this one up very quickly. This does work now with Azure Mobile Apps and that, you know, the Azure Easy Auth functionality. So I can select my identity providers. That's all pretty straightforward. But I can also capture additional pieces of information as part of the registration flow. So for example, is this loading? There we go. I can configure custom pieces, but for example, if I want to make sure that everyone tells me what their job title is as part of the registration flow, I can absolutely require that piece of information to be captured. Similarly, I can enable multi-factor authentication. I can customize the UI. I can require a password, or I can enable people to reset their own passwords. So there's a whole bunch of functionality here that we would typically need to build for our apps that we can leverage. So let's jump into this other version of the app. So again, no server-side API changes required here at all. So this version of the app is using the offline data store. So the data comes up immediately, right? It's cached, it's sitting in a SQLite data store. When I hit refresh, it's not going to prompt me for my password because it is able to use the refresh token that we've been able to store and just refresh that token with one line of code. And now it's going to be able to just, rather than getting all of the sessions back, it just gets any of the sessions that have changed. So a significantly accelerated and improved user experience there. So that's kind of the final touches that we would apply to a mobile scenario. Let's go and talk about integration, which is obviously far more applicable to most applications. So let's go and check out what a VNet integration might look like. So let's go and take a look at the attendee controller here. So I've decided to create a fictional requirement for my app that whenever somebody registers, I want to be able to send their email address to an on-premises database for, you know, I've called it the marketing database. So this is what's required to go and insert a row into a database. And if you've done .NET before, you're probably familiar with how to write SQL code in ADO.NET. There is nothing new here, right? There is nothing that even hints in this that we are traversing a virtual network. It is just completely stock standard ADO.NET code. And if we jump into the application itself, wait for the great reveal. Let's go and check out the on-premise SQL connection string here. It's a very, very small field, but I can actually probably make that a bit wider. You'll see it's actually hitting an internal IP address, right? There is nothing special here. Because the VNet is at the networking layer, there's nothing special I need to do here to connect through to this on-premise database. So if we take a look at how to do VNet connections, super simple. I'm going to grab another app that I prepared earlier. Once the VNet is set up, once that initial investment is done, it makes the remaining work pretty straightforward from an app developer perspective. So this is another app on the app service. These are the list of virtual networks that I can connect to. I click on the virtual network and that's done. We are now connected to that on-premise network. So once that network is there, it's very easy to start hooking your applications into that. Now, if you've ever built cloud-based applications or successful applications, you are probably thinking, well, you know what? I probably don't want every time somebody hits my endpoint to go all the way back to my on-premise database because that database is a long way away. It's going to slow down all of my calls and it's probably not a particularly performant database because it's been around for a while. So actually calling out and hitting an on-premise database, while it's a useful capability, it's probably not one that's going to set you up for massive success. A far better pattern and one that we see working really well for us in the cloud is kind of an event-based architecture. So rather than trying to do everything synchronously, we put messages on a service bus or another queued system. That operation is really quick, and then we can take that message off the queue and process that at our leisure. So if we can do things asynchronously, we should absolutely do things asynchronously in the cloud. As you can see now, the connection is finished. It was a super simple step. So we're going to have a look at how we can use messages on service bus and wire that into a logic app, which is a great example of what we can do with asynchronous messages. So if you think about a service bus, you're putting messages on, you can have multiple subscribers, you can add subscribers as you need to over time. And if you want to add additional logic apps, you just add subscribers. You don't actually have to fundamentally change your application on the in code. So this is a very simple logic flow that I've got here. I receive a message from a service bus subscription. I then go and query the database that I have on-premise that has the ability to go in and parse the JSON that I had from that message and then match rows in that particular table for that particular user. So I can identify whether the user is there or not, whether the user is already in the database. And if the user is not in the database, then I can add them to the database. I can go and insert that row, even though it's on-premise. I can then reach out to a whole bunch of different software as a service providers. This one's SendGrid, so I can go and send them an email. I thought that was a sensible thing to do. As you can see, there are just a complete truckload of options here for integration points. So some of the traditional ones here, we can see that are BizTalk-esque. And then there's obviously some more software as a service ones. There are absolutely some ones that are more of a social nature that are probably less relevant in business space, but there are a considerable number here and they're only growing. The other really cool thing that I can do is actually call my own APIs. So if I create an API app, which is what we were talking about earlier, and actually expose that with the right kind of metadata, I can call that from my integration as well. So I'm not just limited to software as a service providers, I can actually work with my own code as well. Okay, cool. So that's logic apps and kind of by accident, also showing how we can interact with API apps and some of the value that they provide. Let's flip back and have a chat about extending and managing our app service applications. So hopefully at this point you're kind of thinking, okay, well there's a whole bunch of different features in app service. I can add them to my applications as I need them. And as you do this, you're doing this on an enterprise-grade platform. This thing will scale massively. We have run a number of global-facing applications on this platform, and it scales really nicely. You can scale up tiers, so from basic to standard to premium, and that allows you to get some of the cooler features like staging slots and daily backups. You can also scale the number of nodes that you have in your app service from 1 to 20, so you can actually scale out. You can also scale the size of those nodes from 1 core, 2 gig VMs, all the way up to to 8-core, 14-ish gig VMs. And you can actually scale this on a schedule or based on a target CPU utilization range. And if you think again back to a line of business scenario, you know, you can scale this farm all the way down overnight because nobody's really going to be using it, and then have it scale up during the day. So you can actually be very efficient with resources, especially if you're putting multiple applications on the same set of hardware. You can then combine this with some of the other services like Traffic Manager, which allows you to distribute load across multiple data centers and failover or find the nearest data center to your users, as well as caching static content with things like CDN. Another common addition, and one we made, was to use Redis alongside our mobile service and our offline data sync structure. One of the gotchas with offline sync is that to determine if anything has changed, the client has to make 2 HTTP calls per data type. So I think we ended up with around 20 data types in our application. So that meant it was running 40 sequential HTTP calls to determine if nothing has changed, right? So just on boot and nothing's changed, it has to make 40 requests to confirm that. So there are a couple of areas where you can optimize that. One is just to have an endpoint that it can call and it can tell the client whether anything has changed recently. The other way that we improved performance was actually using Redis. And if you've used Redis just as a key value store, then I would very much encourage you to attend a Redis session either here or at another conference. But there are a whole bunch of different data types that Redis supports. And one that we found worked really well for us was sorted sets. We in fact took our entire data set and put that in Redis. We put it in a sorted set and we sorted it by last modified time. So we could actually query Redis and say, hey, this client's synced 2 days ago, give me just the records that have changed in the last 2 days. So in this way, it was almost acting like a database, right? We were actually able to ask it for a specific range of records rather than getting all the records back. And then the last piece that I think is relevant is this concept of an app service environment. And this is different to an app service plan. An app service environment is quite an expensive investment. I think they run at a couple of grand a month, and they don't really do anything at that level. You kind of have to spend a little bit more to get them to do something. But an app service environment is a complete app service deployment inside your virtual network. So you can create a virtual network in Azure, you can connect that virtual network to your on-premise environment, and you can deploy your own copy of app service in here with an app service environment. And you know, there are certain recommendations around this when you're actually running at a certain scale tier where this is going to be useful. So you know, for massive applications, you may want to consider this. The more interesting one, again, is actually from a line of business perspective, right? Because I can actually take away the public access point once I've done this, right? Once my app service plan is actually inside my network, I no longer need an external IP address or an external DNS name, right? I can actually secure this. So if I wanted to move business applications up here that I want to secure as part of an existing network infrastructure, I can absolutely do this. I can put a network security group on here. I can control inbound and outbound traffic and restrict it to my network only. So there's some pretty cool things you can do here if you are considering moving applications to the cloud. They're a little bit sensitive. From a manageability perspective, there are some cool things to call out. One is super, super easy continuous integration and deployment. Visual Studio Team Services has some really great functionality for build and release, but so does App Service. App Service allows you to point at your favorite source repository, whether it be Visual Studio Team Services or GitHub or whatever. And anytime you do a check-in to that repository, it will grab the latest version of the code, it will build it, and it will release it. And it's all running on the hardware that you've already provisioned, that you use to host your application. So it's a super rapid CI/CD kind of implementation. Now, as your application grows, you're probably going to want something a little bit more robust for through VSTS. But in terms of a rapid application development methodology, this is a super cool feature to drop in. It's 2 or 3 clicks, and suddenly you're releasing every time you check in. There are a bunch of Well, there's really only one option for Insight when you're building a web app, and that's App Insights, at least from Microsoft. When you're building mobile apps, it's a little bit more confusing. Mobile app developers will know that Microsoft bought Hockey App recently, which is great for crash analytics, release management, and the like. Unfortunately, it doesn't have a whole bunch of the telemetry features that App Insights currently has. So typically, app developers had to use both of those services, at least in the short term. These are both really easy to add to, right? It's literally drop an SDK in and you start getting telemetry. So it's a real no-brainer when you're setting up a new app is just to provision one of those, drop the SDK in. You can obviously instrument your application quite considerably, but from a rapid application development mindset, it's adding the SDK is sufficient to get a whole bunch of value. And then the last one is some of the diagnostic functionality. And I'm the first one to admit that sometimes when I deploy my apps, they don't work as well as they could. One of the nice things about app services is that they have a whole bunch of diagnostics tools to make figuring out why it's not working easier. Right, so it can scan the event log, it can do a memory dump and analyze that, it can scan your web server logs and identify problematic requests, it can give you real-time monitoring of HTTP traffic, it can give you a real-time event log from events that are emitted by your application. Right, I think we might just skip the last demo. We're a little bit over time, we've got 4 minutes left, so let me wrap things up a little early. So I think one of the key takeaways I'm hoping you'll get from this session is that the app service should be your default starting point. Bring whatever language you want to work in, bring whatever OS you want to run on. App service will be able to support you and help you build great applications in a really agile and fast way. VMs, Service Fabric, cloud services all have their place, but I think app service is absolutely the right starting point for most applications. You can start small on this platform and then scale to great things. You can scale through adding a bunch of different features that they offer, but you can also scale simply through the hardware. And no matter how big your application or how important it is, you're going to be running on a really solid enterprise-grade platform that has seen some massive deployments and some massive projects go through. As you go into production, you can trust in the fact that the diagnostics, the scalability, the monitoring is all baked in. And if you take a few simple steps, like adding the right SDKs, you get great visibility from when you start dev all the way through until you reach production and no doubt great success. So I hope you've learned something about App Service. I hope you'll consider using it for your next application development project. Thanks for coming along today. I hope you enjoy the rest of the conference. I'll be around for questions after the session. Otherwise, I'll see you at drinks or at the party.